Do you, Chris, take this woman to be your lawfully wedded wife? Do you promise to barrage her with obscure facts concerning comics, movies, TV shows, and toys?
I do.
And Cindy, do you take this man-child to be your lawfully wedded husband? Do you promise to humor him by engaging him in his obsessive ramblings, for better or worse, in pre-crisis or in post?
Sure, why not?
Then by the power invested in me by the High Father of the Fourth World, I now pronounce you Supermates. You may podcast with the bride.
Hello and welcome to episode 5 of Supermates, the Husband and Wife Geekcast. I'm Chris Franklin.
And I'm Cindy.
And we went and saw, just like every other good comic book geek, we went and saw Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
Last weekend,
right. The first Captain America movie is my personal favorite of the Marvel movies. In fact, it's just one of my favorite comic book movies, period. Or favorite movies. Favorite movies, period. When I walked out of the first Captain America movie, I hadn't had that fanboy rush feeling in a long, long time. But this one is a different type of movie, of course, set in modern times, but it is a very, very good movie. It's a very, even though it's
got multi-layered movie.
Yes, very, very well said. It's a heady subject, but they approach it in a way that you don't walk out feeling depressed or you know, beating your head against the wall or emotionally drained.
I'm sorry, but just to break in here because, you know, you're going on about this, but Chris Evans is pretty.
Well, Chris Evans, and I have gushed about Chris Evans before. Me and Rob did that Power Records episode. Rob Kelly did the Power Records episode, mm-hmm. where we did the Cap, the one Power Record adventure that they did of Captain America. And we got to talking about the movies and the different versions, and we both really, really liked the first Avenger, and that's Rob's favorite Marvel movie, too. And Evans is just, he approaches Captain America in the same way that Christopher Reeve did Superman.
Mm-hmm.
You believe it. He's complete sincerity, completely earnest. That is a hard role to pull off and mm-hmm. not come across as, like, especially in today's cynical world, to not come across as, like, just a
corn-fed dork.
Exactly. I mean, you know, and I like Robert Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark, but it's easy to play a smartass.
Oh, yeah.
It's not as easy to play the morally upright, earnest, sincere hero like Captain America or Superman. And, you know, I've said it before, Captain America was the one Marvel character that they had to get absolutely right. They had to cast the absolute right person to give the absolute right performance, or it just wasn't going to work.
Well, that's a case, like, we have talked about this before as far as casting. You know, Christopher Reeve, Superman. Linda Carter, Wonder Woman. Chris Evans, Captain America.
Yeah, then Linda.
Those people, you know, they can walk in the room in a skin-tight costume or what have you, but it doesn't matter because they are that character.
Right, and that's Wonder Woman's another one that, you know, and, you know, Linda Carter, you really don't have anybody to compare her against. Nobody else really played Wonder Woman in live action, if you don't count Kathy Lee Crosby or that pilot that never aired. The kind of homely chick looks in the mirror and sees the girl from Planet of the Apes is Wonder Woman.
That was what, from the 60s? Late 60s, yeah.
Yeah, the same, the Batman people did it. The Batman TV show people. But, that's another one. I mean, you know, she was very, she played the role exactly in the same manner, you know, that they do. And Evans just, and I've said this elsewhere too, but he does such a great job as Cap. If Captain America 3 was him in costume, in character, Steve Rogers reading a phone book, I'd go see it. Because he just does such a great job. And Cap's always been my, you know, everybody loves Spider-Man, but of my personal favorite Marvel characters, Cap's the guy. And he's the guy, I was mostly a DC guy growing up, but I followed Spidey and Cap just as much as I did Superman and Batman, really. And that brings me to another point. This movie is so well done. It's, like I said, it's got some, you know, real world issues kind of put into a comic movie with the whole idea of privacy and you know, giving up freedoms for protection and security and things like that. But you never, they never forget the fun. They never forget the characterization. And as much as I'm a DC guy, I hate to say it, but the DC movies have lost the fun.
Mm-hmm.
I liked Man of Steel for what it was, and I liked the movie. I liked Henry Cavill. I thought he did a good job, a good performance. But they need to find that balance, you know. And I like the Nolan Batman movies overall, but they need to find that balance that the Marvel movies, you know, have. You can bring up some subjects that you might leave the theater thinking about and questioning and stuff, but you still have a fun movie, action movie. You got plenty of action, plenty of backstory. You actually care about the characters, and that's what I really liked about this Captain America movie and the Thor sequel as well. Iron Man 3, not so much.
I still haven't seen it. You and Andrew went and saw that yourself.
Yeah, Andrew.
The only reason I want to buy that DVD is that the Peggy Carter short's on there.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason. I mean, Andrew was ticked off.
Andrew, our son Andrew, was very upset over the, and we won't go into it in case you haven't seen it, but there's, and I'm sure anybody knows, there's quite a twist to it. He was not happy with that twist. And I think the twist was a kind of a cheat, and it was just them being cheeky, honestly. And I mean, it was okay, but to me, it's the weakest of the Marvel films that they put out. I liked Iron Man 2 a lot better than 3. I know a lot of people don't like 2. They say it's a rehash of 1, but I enjoyed Iron Man 2. Iron Man 3, I was kind of like, you know, it had its moments, but Thor 2 was great, probably better than the first. Cap 2. I didn't like it as well as the first, but just because the first Captain America was that yay rah, you know, yay,
yeah,
you know, that patriotic, yeah, you know, walking out of the theater, you know, thing. But I still really enjoyed this. So in other words, go see Captain America: The Winter Soldier.
Oh yeah,
I wouldn't mind seeing it again, actually. So if the opportunity arises, we will do that.
Yeah.
You like cheap comic books, right? Well, I'm Professor Allen, and I talk about cheap comic books on the Quarterbin Podcast. In every episode, I'll dissect a single comic from my collection, as long as I paid no more than 25 cents for the issue. Forget about $4 new comics that you can read in 4 minutes, or crossover events that can cost $100 to collect. Join me in the Quarterbin, where even bad comics are a bargain, and good ones are a steal. The Quarterbin Podcast is part of the Relatively Geeky Podcast Network. Visit us at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com or search Relatively Geeky or Quarterbin Podcast in iTunes. I guarantee it'll be worth every penny. Gotta get back in time.
So now onto the main subject of our show. We're going to hop in our DeLorean, drive 88 miles per hour, and travel back in time to the decade where men wore pastel and women had shoulder pads.
Like a linebacker.
That's right, the 80s, and more specifically, the toys of the 80s. And even more specifically, our memories of the toys of the 80s. So we're not going to get bogged down in the history or the details of the toy lines. It's going to be
talking about how we got the toys and how we ended up losing the toys and that kind of thing.
Right. So here we go. This is a husband-wife geek cast. You're going to get the action figure side. You're going to get the girl toy doll side of things.
I am a chick.
Whatever. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to go back and forth and kind of volley back and forth. I think that's a good idea to do it.
Okay. Go first.
Okay. So you know, the 80s began when I was like 5 years old in 1980. And so I had grown up in the 70s with Mego. I pretty much like went from Fisher Price straight into Mego, I think. I mean, I had probably not too many Fisher Price things. So I had a good chunk of the Mego, World's Greatest Superheroes. and other Mego figures. And so, you know, they were still coming out into the 80s. In 1982, actually, Mego went bankrupt. So it was kind of weird that around that same time, in 1982, a toy line came out called Masters of the Universe. And, of course, a lot of people, you know, refer to that as He-Man. So I don't really remember what made me want the Masters of the Universe figures. I don't have trouble saying that altogether. The Masters figures. But there was just something about them. They appealed to me. I wanted them. And
of course, being the little spoiled kid you are, you got it.
Well, I think, and I could be wrong, and people could probably go look up dates and say, oh, no, you're wrong, they came out then. But I seem to recall they came out, you know, not too long before Christmas of 1982. And I remember that Christmas I got
everything.
He-Man and Battle Cat in the gift set, which was cool. Skeletor. And Castle Grayskull. So I basically got everything you needed, like the He-Man.
The start of the universe.
The He-Man primer kit, yeah. And I remember getting up Christmas morning, and I was horrible about this every Christmas. I would get up, we would go to bed, and I would basically lay there in bed. And then after I thought it was okay for me to get up and Santa had done his work, I would get up and go in the living room, and I would just look at all the boxes of things. I couldn't open them, but I could stare at them, you know? And this box for Castle Grayskull scared the crap out of me. I was a wiener of a kid, and I mean, this very Frank Frazetta looking box was very menacing. I mean, this huge skull face structure and all these weird characters on both sides of it. But, I mean, I when I got my parents up, and I remember them fighting over putting Castle Grayskull together. And, it was great. It was a great toy. One of the best plays that's ever made still. I mean, you know, it had all the trap doors and all that type of stuff and the drawbridge and everything. And what I thought was really cool was, and a lot of people, I mean, the diehard Masters of the Universe fans know this, but in the earliest, the He-Man figures always came with a comic book. And I think most of the early ones were actually produced by DC, or they were at some point. But in the early stories, He-Man was just like some barbarian that lived in a hut. I mean, he wasn't Prince Adam, which came later. And you really got the whole deal that, like, he had half of the power sword, Skeletor had half, because the two swords were like, they were basically flat on one side. And so you could, like, stick them together to make one sword.
Hmm.
And then you could use that to open the door to Castle Grayskull. That kind of got lost when they did the comic and then the actual DC comic and the cartoon. The DC did a comic not long after that. And I got, you know, other figures as they came out. They did a comic not long after that. And that was, they did a miniseries and they did a preview that ran in a bunch. I mean, every DC comic that month had this preview, and it was like drawn by Kurt Swan, and it had Superman in it. So you had Superman and He-Man teaming up, and it actually introduced Prince Adam. Or that was the first time I saw him. So the cartoon came later, not too long after that, I don't think. I think the cartoon came out in 83, so it was like the next year. But for the first year or something, it was kind of like, it was a much more like Conan fantasy type series in a way. It had more of an edge to it. Mm-hmm. And the Filmation cartoon, which of course I loved at the time, it kind of watered it down a little bit, you know, just it, they made it a little more, I don't know. I don't want to say they, you know, I was only what, 7 or 8 or whatever when it came out, but even though I liked it, I could kind of tell, okay, they've kind of kiddified it.
Right, pulled its teeth.
They pulled its teeth a little bit, you know, which, you know, I think there were regulations on TV that they couldn't produce a cartoon based on a toy line for many years. I think it came up in the 70s, and I think part of it, in fact, was it all had to do with kind of the same thing that Mego got in trouble for with those Action Jackson cartoons commercials, because they were depicting things the toys couldn't do. And the flip side of that was you couldn't have a show based on a toy line because it was like a half hour commercial.
Mm-hmm.
But there was they had been deregulated in the early 80s, and so He-Man was kind of the first one out of the gate, and you know, it essentially was a half hour toy commercial disguised as a cartoon. Although they did put, you know, the little PSA things at the end. But you had G.I. Joe and Transformers and all those come after that. But He-Man was kind of the first one. So He-Man, Masters of the Universe, I mean, slow down to that, Masters of the Universe toy line. You know, it was probably like the biggest toy line there for a while. I mean, it was huge. Everybody was into it. You know, kids, there were T-Man shirts everywhere. Every kid had some figures. I actually had all the figures and all the accessories up to a certain point. I really literally did collect them all, you know.
Including She-Ra.
I was going to get to that. But but yes, when they launched, you know, they launched the She-Ra Princess of Power line and the cartoon that went with it. And the cartoon was actually pretty straightforward, like a spinoff of He-Man. I mean, it looked like He-Man. It wasn't even that much more girly than He-Man.
Keep telling yourself
that. The toy line, though, was pretty freaking girly. But I felt like, okay, I need to get these because I'm a completist. So I'm getting these She-Ra figures. I made it through the first series, and I'm like, I just can't do this. I can't go on.
Did you ever brush her long golden hair?
No, I didn't.
Don't shove me off the chair.
It got tangled, and I know I didn't. You know, and I was like, you know, they had Teela and Evil Lyn in the regular He-Man line. So, but they, you know, they gave She-Ra rooted hair, and the one guy, Bo, had like a heart that pumped in his chest. And I mean, it was just,
I think he was girlier than She-Ra was.
Yeah, he looked like a shrunk down Ken doll. I mean, really, he had that. He didn't have the He-Man proportions of the squat with the roid rage, you know, thing going on. But, yeah, so I even went in for that. And one thing that you don't get here mentioned a lot, one thing I really liked was, I don't think Mattel made him. I think the company was called like HG Toys or something. They made a lot of dress up playset, like, you know, type things for other, they made shields and like, I think they made like generic, shields and swords and things for just general knight type stuff. And I think even they might've made like Dukes of Hazzard role play things, but they made He-Man role play items. I think that's who made them. But there was like a power sword that it split into two halves, and one was glow in the dark on one side, and one was the silver gray look. It had the shield and had the wrist cuffs and stuff. And those were really cool, you know, toys to have. That they were pretty authentic looking. You know, they did a pretty good job on them. And I even went as He-Man. I don't know, third or fourth grade. I bought the Ben Cooper costume, but I basically just cut the harness part out of the smock, and like my mom took long johns and dyed them flesh colored, and I had like brown shorts on, so it looked a little better than just the, you know, crappy Ben Cooper costume. But so that was He-Man was just I was huge into He-Man, but it was kind of the first one of the 80s toy lines I gave up, because I don't know, as I got older, I think part of it was the way the Filmation cartoon was. It felt like a little bit like those 70s Filmation cartoons. You know, they had the cute sidekick character they added in Orko. You know, it kind of had that a little younger than, say, like G.I. Joe or Transformers. I mean, that's splitting hairs, really, but at the time I felt like it was. So that was kind of the first toy line I dropped, and I got out of it right before they got into the movie, which the movie's like, it's not a bad like 80s sci-fi fantasy movie, but it doesn't feel much like a Masters of the Universe movie. It's more like it just seems like it's like a He-Man meets the, you know, the Goonies or something. I don't know, it's just weird. But Frank Langella makes a pretty good Skeletor, but other than that, it's kind of yeah. So that's pretty much all I got for Masters of the Universe that I can think of right now.
Well, I mean, you were talking about that was the toy that you wanted at the beginning of the 80s, and The toy I wanted at the beginning of the 80s was Great Shape Barbie and Sun Gold Malibu Barbie. Those were the two that I had to have, that I wanted. And my parents didn't really buy. I mean, they would buy you toys on your birthday, and they would buy you toys at Christmas. And then other than that, my parents really didn't do that. I wasn't spoiled like somebody else I know that sat beside me. So I had to wait and wait and wait. And, you know, I actually ended up, I want to say that a friend of mine gave me Great Shapes Barbie when I was, you know, probably in second or third grade. I'd have to look for my birthday one year. And I mean, I had both of those dolls for a long time. And then my mother's one of these people that likes to clean stuff out. And, you know, I have very few of the toys from my childhood, but I was very lucky because I married a toy man.
That's right.
And Chris actually has replaced both my Great Shapes Barbie and my Sun Gold Malibu Barbie. And they're in the box and they're mine and they're on my shelf. And I have a little piece of my childhood back from that, so.
That's very nice. Yes. I have most of my He-Man stuff is in some shape or form in our basement. And it's in played with shape, but it's decent, but, you know.
Well, but that's the thing. I mean, you have the actual ones you had when you were a kid, and I don't.
Yeah.
But, you know, mine are minty.
Yeah, that's true. Yours are minty. I have resisted the urge to collect He-Man stuff as a collector. I've just...
We have no more room.
I know, we have no more room, and I spend enough money on other stuff, but, so...
Hot Toys 66 Batman, anybody? Hot Toys 66 Robin, anybody?
Those were must-haves. They were essential to my being. And they should be here soon, for too long. So, you got anything more on that, or...
Well, you know, I was going to do the whole back and forth thing, and it's kind of funny. The same girl that got me the Great Shapes Barbie, she also bought me Strawberry Shortcake. Mm. And that was actually one of the last dolls I got. She came to the birthday party, and she got me the Cafe Au Lait Strawberry Shortcake. Mm. And I loved Strawberry Shortcake, and that is one doll I still have from when I was a little girl.
Oh, okay.
That's one I do have. I have my original Strawberry Shortcake, but I'm a big dork, and I went through this phase that I would rename all of my dolls, and I would write on the back of the doll's head or their back or, you know, whatever, I would write their name and the date. So all of my dolls from then have their name that I gave them and the date. Like, my Strawberry Shortcake has the word Jane on the back, because apparently she looked like a Jane to me.
But that's that way it's yours. I mean, you know, it's... I mean, yeah, if you ever wanted to resell them, yeah, but do you really want to sell them?
No, no. And so, I mean, Strawberry Shortcake, to me, it was important enough to me that... I guess it was just a couple years ago, 2 years ago, they came out with an anniversary set. And it was important enough to me that I bought that anniversary set of three dolls, and I bought Danny a set.
Right.
And I was really I've been really gratified by the fact that Danny, our little girl, plays with those Strawberry Shortcake dolls.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
Now, if she touches mine, it's on like Donkey Kong, but she's got her own set.
She's got her own set. That's right. That's like when Andrew had his, I put him together a set of Migos, you mm-hmm. know, but don't, so let's not touch Daddy since you
That's right. That's right.
So, yeah, that's cool. I didn't do a whole lot of like customizing my toys when I was a kid. I did a few things here and there, but that, I think it's neat that you.
What is that one thing that you did that you were trying to make into Abraham Lincoln and it was?
Oh, that was for school. Mm-hmm. I did a diorama, like a shoebox diorama, and the only figure I could find that I didn't want to mutilate one of my G.I. Joe figures. I had the old Mattel Mork for Mork, the 3 3/4 size Mork.
Oh, okay.
And so he got like a beard glued on him, and he got painted black. So yeah, Robin Williams as Abe Lincoln. That's, put that through your brain, see what comes out.
Hey, you know, he's done stranger roles.
Yeah.
I got it! Wow.
Here it is, the USS Flag aircraft carrier. Imagine being on the deck of this aircraft carrier.
The USS Flag!
USS Flag aircraft carrier comes with what you see here. Other figures and equipment sold separately.
So, in 1982 also, that was the year that G.I. Joe came back as the G.I. Joe Real American Hero. And I didn't have any of the larger 12-inch G.I. Joes or even the 8-inch Super Joes. I didn't. To me, G.I. Joe was a new thing. Not having an older brother, I had an older sister, I didn't have access to the 12-inch Joes. And it was actually a few years into me knowing about G.I. Joe that I even knew that they made the larger G.I. Joes. But because of the success of Star Wars, they came back with Joe at a smaller size. And that's something I should probably bring up. One thing you'll notice absent from this show is really talk about Star Wars toys.
Mm-mm.
I came in a very strange time with Star Wars and the toys. I was just young enough that when the first movie came out, my parents didn't take me to see it. I guess they thought it was, you know, I wasn't quite even three when it came out. So I was just under the age that, you know, they would take me to that. I saw Superman the movie the next year. That was my Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
That's the movie that I look at the way a lot of people look at Star Wars. So that's why I'm the way I am. But that's really the clincher. But so I had a few Star Wars toys. I had Darth Vader. I had Bespin Luke. And I had a, you know, that was about it. I had a Luke and I had a Vader. And that's, I watched the movies when they came on TV, but I never saw any of them in the theater, the original movies. So I played with other kids Star Wars, and I liked Star Wars. I had book and record sets, but I just wasn't a huge
Star Wars fan.
And I'm still more of a Star Trek fan, big time, than over Star Wars. I enjoy Star Wars. But I just never got into it like other people.
Well, Andrew's into it.
Yeah, Andrew's into it a lot more than I am, which is cool. And he likes the original movies better than the prequels, thank God. But
uh-huh.
Anyway, but anyway, so G.I. Joe came out in 82. And when it first came out, I had absolutely no interest in it. I was never a big Army guy. I didn't play Army. I mean, I had a few Army men, every kid did. But I didn't play with them very much. It didn't appeal to me. The Marvel comic that came out at the same time, it looked just like every other war comic, which I also wasn't interested in. The only thing it had going for it, I did think even then Snake Eyes was cool looking. You know, every kid thought Snake Eyes was cool looking. But when they got me with their half-hour commercial, they did the first miniseries, and everybody, you know, they advertised that thing. Everybody was going to watch it. This was like Roots for the, you know, the elementary
the
school
kinder
set.
Yeah,
you had to watch the G.I. Joe miniseries. And, you know, I got hooked. And, you know, I went out and I bought a Duke. And I think Duke was probably the first one I bought, which makes sense because he was the leader. As far as the cartoon goes, he was the leader. And, you know, and then I got Zartan, which, you know, he had the cool color change skin and the disguises and Blowtorch. Now, why Blowtorch? He's pretty insignificant, but he just looked cool. He was red and yellow, and he had a flamethrower, so, you know, it's pretty cool. So, and after that, I was, you know, pretty much into G.I. Joe. I mean, and the cool thing about G.I. Joe was you could afford it because the figures themselves were pretty cheap, and they had vehicles at different price points. So, you know, if you couldn't afford, like, a big vehicle, I mean, you could get a vehicle for, like, $5. It was like a motorcycle or something. And then, like, at a $10 price point, you could get a smaller vehicle and a figure. And then you could get, $20, you get a bigger one. But, I mean, there was something for everybody, you know. So you could build a pretty decent G.I. Joe collection and not break the bank, which was really cool. And they put out a metric ton of figures every year, which was really neat. One thing that was really odd with me and my friends that I've found a lot of people didn't do, it's kind of strange that we did, was we basically would go through the catalog that, like, came in a G.I. Joe vehicle box. You know, if you didn't get it in a figure, but if you bought a vehicle, it came with, like, the catalog that showed everything that was coming out that year, a little mini catalog, and it would show all the characters. And we would go through and say, I want to be this guy. I want to be that guy. I want to be this guy. And we would pick those guys, and we were those guys from then on. I mean, we basically were
assigning your roles.
Assigning our role. It was almost like making it a role-playing game. And probably because we mostly usually played at my house, in my yard, and I had the majority of the toys.
Spoiled.
Sometimes on G.I. Joe, my other two sets of friends had quite a bit of them. But for whatever reason, I usually picked the leader guy. Like, I was Duke. And when they brought out General Hawk again, I was Hawk, you know. And so I was He-Man. We did it with He-Man, too. I was He-Man. But hey, you're playing in my house, you know, so I get first pick, right? But part of it too was the guy that had Nathan, the other guy that had the most toys. He actually wanted to be the bad guy, so he kind of.
He's now a lawyer, so yeah, you know, kind of worked out for him.
I hope he's not listening to this because he could sue us. But
he didn't give his last name.
No, but. But he usually wanted to be the bad guy, so it kind of worked out. He was Cobra Commander, he was Skeletor, you know. G.I. Joe was just, we'd pick our characters, and from then on, we were them. And really, you know, the cartoon, you know, they did a couple of miniseries, and then they did a regular series. And they're looking back on it now, it's really not that much more adult than Masters of the Universe and He-Man with the Masters of the Universe cartoon. But at the time, I really felt like it was edgier, you know, and it was more realistic, and there was more, you know, the gritty, and it really wasn't. The comic books were, but the comic books and the TV show didn't quite line up. I liked the comic books, but it confused me because there were differences, you know, what was really weird is I found out years later that Larry Hama, that wrote the comic, also wrote the file cards on the back. He basically created the characters a lot of the time. So, you know, they'd say, well, we want to do this type of character. He'd make up all their backstory to them. So it was, G.I. Joe, of course, was huge. And it ran longer than any toy line that started in the 80s. It ran into the 90s. And I got out of it right pretty much. That was one of the last toy lines I really had because you know, they were still putting out stuff. They had gotten into more sci-fi and weird stuff, but every once in a while they put out one that looked like a real, more realistic military type figure. And I could tell myself, well, I can buy him. He's okay. The paratrooper guy's okay. That makes sense. One thing that was really cool with G.I. Joe, and they had done this with Star Wars, but they didn't have a program like this. They did mail-ins, and they had little things on the back of the G.I. Joe's, little proofs of purchase called flag points, in addition to the regular UPC. But on the G.I. Joe's, you send in the flag points, and they'd have little catalogs also that came in the vehicles that showed you can get, a lot of times it was like retired vehicles or older toys or like special bivouac set that was like a tent and a mortar, and you know, which is cool. And then like really cool things like the hooded Cobra Commander that, you know, he wore. Sometimes he had the silver helmet. Sometimes he had a hood in the cartoon, in the comic books. Well, the only way you could get the hooded Cobra Commander was to send in your flag points. And by golly, I did. And I got one. I still got him too. And you could get like a parachute pack for your G.I. Joes. And I got like the Wolverine, like missile launcher thing. It had been a couple years old. Wasn't out anymore, and I got it through the flag point thing. I had a thing full of flag points for years, and I finally just tossed them. And then years later, when Hasbro brought the line back, like back in the 2000s, they said, you can still use your old flag points. And I was like,
oh, I remember you going,
because they had some really cool.
I think you had, honestly, I remember you still had them when we probably got married, but you just didn't move them.
Right, right, yeah.
And so you had probably just thrown them away like maybe 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, the
before.
Last time we went through like Dad's building, I threw them out. Like, oh, these are useless. There's no point in keeping these, and no collector wants them because they're cut up out of the card. So, yeah, I pitched them, and then later you could use them. But that's like, oh, God. Another thing that I regret, although I don't know what the heck I would have done with it, is you can't talk about G.I. Joe, the 80s G.I. Joe, without mentioning the mega playset of all time, the USS Flag.
Where would we put that?
That thing was 7 foot long. 7 foot long. And I remember the year, I think, you know, it came out, I think it came out in 85, I think. Sounds right. And I wanted that, but even then I'm like, I can't afford it. It was incredibly high. But Walmart had just opened in Cynthiana not that long before. Before that, I bought most of my stuff at Ben Franklin's and Howard's. But Walmart had it marked down, I think, just basically because they didn't have any place to put it. $40. And, of course, $40 back then is more than $40 now. But still, I almost had enough money. I think I had close to enough money to get it. And my mom was like, well, you can get it, but then you ain't going to be able to buy anything else, you know. And she kind of talked me out of it. Probably also, too, she's like, where am I going to put this thing?
Well, yeah.
She talked me out of it. Now that thing goes for God knows what. But it was on the Toy Hunter, you know, a while back. But still, the idea of having that. And I had the Sky Striker jet that, you know.
Would have landed on it.
So it was like, oh, man. But they reissued that Sky Striker a year or two ago. And oh, I was tempted.
Christopher!
I saw some at the Lexington Comic Con. There was some cheap, complete loose G.I. Joes. It was like they were $5 a piece. And I was just like, oh, I don't need to get it back into that. I still have some of my G.I. Joes. G.I. Joe and Transformers, I kind of, I don't know what, when I was like 14 and I decided, I'm too old for toys. And I think it was when I was 13. When I was 13, I'm like, I'm too old for toys. And my mom had a yard sale. And I decided, well, I'm not going to sell any of my superhero stuff, obviously. And I want to keep my He-Man because I got a pretty much a complete run up to a certain point. And so I'll sell my G.I. Joes and my Transformers. And, you know.
And you kept your GoBots.
I kept my GoBots. I think I kept my GoBots only because they were, like, stuffed away, like, with my Hot Wheels or something. I think that's the only reason I kept them. I don't know. I don't know what I was thinking. But, yeah. I kept the G.I. Joes I really, really liked. But I sold a ton of them in almost every vehicle, which I kind of, of course, regret now. But can't keep everything.
No.
You know? No. So I mentioned earlier, you know, there were different price points for G.I. Joe vehicles. And one of them that I had that was one of the cheaper vehicles but was cool was a boat called the Devilfish. And for whatever reason, they made a push for this thing. I mean, there was a commercial for it. And they would do these animated commercials that, you know, they used the same animation studio, the Marvel Animation Studio, that did the cartoon. They'd do the commercials. And a lot of times it was they'd use the same animation in a commercial for the toy and then for the Marvel comic. And the Devilfish was one of them. So the Devilfish commercial was just cool. It came up with the comic, you know, it had them like, in the boat, and like on the boat, which is an important part of the story, on the cover of the comic book. So I had to have this boat. So I get it. You know, it was a cheaper toy. And we had a creek by my house, you know, and we played in it quite a bit. And
I'm sorry, all those germs, it's just gross.
Yeah, because the sewer backed up in it sometimes. My mom was always like, you're going to catch
typhoid,
diphtheria or something. Yeah. But we planned it anyway. But so we had the Devilfish, and you know, me and my friends, and like one of the G.I. Joes was driving the boat, and another character, there were like 2-foot pegs on it that you could like stand the characters on the boat, and one character was on one side and Duke was on the other, and you know, they were going through the water, and one of my friends had a Cobra boat, and you know, they were chasing each other and fighting. And then, like, I don't know, you know, we did something like some explosion or depth charge or bomb went off or something. And so the boat, we, like, you know, kind of threw something toward the boat. And when we did, Duke got knocked off and he was going down the creek. And we're like, oh, man, catch him, catch him. And I swear, it was the craziest thing ever. In the side of the bank were these little holes. I don't know, from, like, worms, snakes, whatever.
Maybe frogs.
Frogs, who knows, you know. But Duke got sucked down this little hole, and he was gone. And, yeah, I mean, of all the G.I. Joes to lose, Duke, gone. I mean, just gone. We, like, dug out the bank. He was gone. I mean, you know.
How did you get another one?
Here's an even crazier part. I'm having a hard time remembering this exactly, but that was actually the second Duke I had. I had lost my first. And we were digging around. My dad had a garden in the back, and there was like some old cinder blocks and stuff around the garden, and it was because the garden set behind my neighbor's garage. It was kind of weird, but my neighbor would let my dad put the garden out there, and we were messing around at some point before dad put the garden out that year, and we were moving those cinder blocks around, and I moved it, a cinder block, and it buried underneath that cinder block was Duke, the first Duke I had. So poor Duke, he got buried alive.
So, okay, your first one got lost.
Yeah.
And then your second one got sucked down a sinkhole. So did you find the first one after you lost the second one?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, it was the weirdest thing. That would never happen again. But, yeah, we found him. And so, and I don't know, I don't have that Duke today. I don't know what happened to him. But, yeah, so those are, you know, these are the things that, that happen to toys. So, oh, one more thing before we leave G.I. Joe. And we'll get into Transformers, the movie, when we talk about Transformers. But they did a G.I. Joe, the movie. It was meant to be a theatrical movie, I'm pretty sure, a cartoon movie. Not to be confused with the recent movies. But when it came out, everybody was, like, really excited for it to see it on TV. They, you know, they put it on TV, and then they put it out on video. But it introduced that god-awful, stupid Cobra Law backstory for Cobra Commander that was just beyond moronic. But the opening part where they're fighting Cobra on Statue of Liberty and they play like an extended version of the G.I. Joe theme, that encapsulates the 80s for me. That when I listen to that and see that, that puts me back in, you know, my dad's tilled-up garden with the G.I. Joes laid out in like they're in a foxhole, like shooting at Cobra and... I mean, that just that does it for me. The rest of the movie's total crap, but that opening is awesome. And I get old goosebumps when I watch it.
Very cool. Very cool.
Sam, what you got?
Now, what do I have? Let's see. We talked about Strawberry Shortcake. We talked about, oh, Cabbage Patch Kids.
There you go.
When you open your arms to a Cabbage Patch Kid, your heart opens wide and lets the love come in. Everyone is special and has so much to give. Come and open your arms to a Cabbage Patch Kid.
Cabbage Patch Kids. Each one's unique. Each sold separately by Coleco.
Cabbage Patch Kids, of course, were a big craze back in the 80s. But for me, my special memory of that is, you know, nobody could find them. You know, that was one thing that I wanted for my Christmas that year. And my mom worked at the local Begley's, which is then became Rite Aid not too long after that. And next to them was a hardware store. Well, we live in a small town, and like Chris had said before, usually your stuff came from either Ben Franklin's or it came from Howard's, which was a small department store. Mm-hmm. And at Christmas time, like Van Hook's Hardware would get stuff and Coast to Coast Hardware would get toys. Western Auto would get toys. But it was just at Christmas time. Mm-hmm. And my mother, the hardware store was right next to the drugstore where my mother worked. And she actually was able to get me a Cabbage Patch Kid. But it was so rabid. My mother told me about this later, you know, after I was grown, you know, because that came from Santa and everything. But she told me after it was grown that the manager of Coast to Coast, she paid on it over time because she didn't want to bring it home and me accidentally find it. So yeah, she had pretty much paid for it and then just kind of laid it away just to keep it out of the way. He actually walked her out to her car. And it was like in like two or three boxes. And some lady actually started to come up to mom. Did you get one of them dolls? Because she knew that mom had a little girl. And mom's like, she said, I put it in the trunk real quick, got in the car. And the guy stood there, you know, the manager stood there while she drove away very quickly.
So that's, well, I think they say, you know, that was the first toy where that happened. I mean, that's happened since, like, over Tickle Me Elmo and things like that. Well, one of the Tickle Me Elmos, you got escorted out to the parking lot at Toys R Us just a few years ago.
I did. well, let's see. I think it's like the 10th anniversary Tickle Me Elmo. So I bought it for Andrew. So it was before Danny was born. Yeah. So it's been seven, 8 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it's been recent, in recent times. But yeah, that was the first one where people were like fighting in a store and slugging it out and moms beating each other over the head to get a Cabbage Patch doll.
But I still have that doll.
Well, hey, you know.
You know, and I mean, cute little blonde hair, little blue dress. And, you know, I remember having that, so...
I'll be honest, and I mean, I'm not trying to tick anybody off. I never got the deal with the Cabbage Patch dolls. I just, because of the distinctive look of their face. I mean, they're kind of cute, but just the whole deal of the head coming up out of the cabbage just it just kind of freaked me out, like the pod people or something.
Well, the funny thing about Cabbage Patch Kids, honestly, they were initially created in Kentucky. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Xavier Roberts was on vacation, either visiting family or, you know, coming through or whatever. And there was a woman that was selling Cabbage Patch Kids at a local craft area, whatever. He picked one up. She had been trying to do the patent, you know, to get a patent on it and stuff like that. He fast-tracked his. He had more money and everything else, and he got the patent before she did.
Oh.
So, but it was based on her design.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yes, and it was started in Kentucky. I can't think right now of the name of the town, but Cabbage Patch Kids actually started in Kentucky.
Because didn't he come from, like, Georgia or something?
And there is a, I want to say it might be in Savannah, Georgia, but I do know it is in Georgia. That is the Cabbage Patch Hospital, where the cabbage patches are all supposed to be born. But it's in Georgia.
Didn't they used to have that in a commercial?
Could go. And I wanted to go. I mean, like, I asked my parents, I want to go on vacation there when I was little. And my dad's like, no. Because I think he was just like, that's just too creepy for words, you know. Oh, and you were talking about my daddy. You know, there's a couple different things about toys and my dad. Like, for one, you had the Mego Wonder Woman.
Oh, yeah.
And my dad and I, that was one show that me and my dad watched together. Now, I'm sure he was watching it for a little bit different reason than I was.
Yes. Yes.
I
can think of two. Oh.
Seriously. Anyway, you know, Daddy and I did watch that, but I didn't even know they made a doll of it, but you ended up with that doll.
Yeah, I mean, that's getting back in the 70s, but, you know, I didn't have all the Mego superheroes, unfortunately, but I had Mego superheroes, and I watched Wonder Woman, you know, everybody did watch Wonder Woman, somebody got me the 12-inch Wonder Woman for, I think, my birthday one year.
But your birthday's right around Christmas.
Yeah, my birthday's right around Christmas, and I remember just kind of like, I couldn't have been three or four. And even then I remember going, thanks, you know, kind of like, what am I going to do with this? So, you know, I didn't play with her a whole lot. Her Diana Prince.
So he says.
Her Diana Prince glasses and jacket went on my 8-inch Mego Superman to make him Clark Kent. So, so she didn't get a lot of play. And I don't know what happened to her, but, you know, so I didn't have the regular 8-inch Mego Wonder Woman. So I got a Wonder Woman figure later, but we'll get into that next.
Well, I mean, and the other thing, you were talking about G.I. Joe. Back when the G.I. Joe craze was really big and everything, I remember one time, it was so funny. We were in McDonald's, me and my dad, was a big fella. I mean, he was built like a big barrel-chested man, and he had on, like, a camouflage cap and, you know, had on, you know, his work clothes and everything, and this little boy came up with his sister, and we were standing in line at McDonald's, and the kid couldn't have been no more than 4 or 5 years old, and he starts tugging on his sister. He's like, "That's G.I. Joe! That's G.I. Joe!" And the sister's like, "Shut up! Just shut up!" Apparently, my dad resembled Sergeant Slaughter.
Yeah.
And I mean,
the cartoon version of Sergeant Slaughter more than the actual Sergeant Slaughter.
Well, you know, but my dad, you know, and I could kind of see that because, you know, my dad always wore a white t-shirt, you know, when he did, in the summer and everything else.
He kind of dressed a little bit So, yeah, I could see that. Speaking of Wonder Woman, the next toy line that rocked my world, was, came out in 1984 and featured Wonder Woman, and that was the fabled Superpowers toy line.
Hey kids, Orko here. Today we learned that Chris and Cindy recorded way too many 80s toy memories to fit in one episode. So come back next time for part two. They'll talk about Superpowers, Care Bears, Secret Wars, My Buddy, Rainbow Bright, Transformers, Gem, Mask, and more.
Hey, Dorko! Where are ya?
Oh, awesome sauce! He's recording a podcast!
Uh-oh! It's that imp in the funny hat and the fat kid in the Batman costume. They're always picking on me. Well, gotta run. See you next time.
Supermates is a Franklin & Franklin production in association with Bugaloo Enterprises Worldwide. The fictional characters and events mentioned in this show are trademarked and copyright their respective owners. Likewise, all audio clips are copyright their owners, and we mean no infringement by either. Thank you for listening to Supermates, the husband and wife geek cast.